The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Speeding, speeding, speeding all around. 3, 2, 1.
Hey, everybody. Coming up on the Rory McIlroy podcast with myself, Carson Daly. Excited to have the two-time FedEx Cup champion. We're going to chat about all things on the PGA Tour. Also, we're going to look back and remember the great Arnold Palmer. Plus, Rory's rigorous schedule, 7 out of the last 8 weeks. Is he ever going to get any sleep? All that coming up right here on Golf Pass. And welcome to the Rory McIlroy podcast. We have the one and only Rory McIlroy, two-time FedEx Cup champ now. Roars, welcome back to the U.S. and congratulations, buddy.
Thanks, Carson. Good to see you. Good to do one of these again. It's been a while.
It is good. I've always said I wish we could do this podcast like every week after a tournament. That would require me quitting my career and being your caddy. And I know Harry would have something to say about that. So that's not going to happen. But it is good to get you back here stateside. And we have a lot to chat about. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling good. Glad to have a week off, finally. It's been a long stretch, but it's been a great stretch as well. You know, I've played some great golf, and obviously it was very rewarding at the end. And but yeah, nice to just sit back and reflect on what's been an awesome season.
Roars, as a fellow golf champion myself, you remember I won the Pebble Beach Pro-Am a couple years ago.
Yeah, you don't let us forget that.
I certainly, I don't. And listen, we're basically the same, right? I mean, I won that. Jim Nance gave me the trophy. Jordan Spieth had to wait. I also won another trophy for helping out the pro the most. So I know that when I jumped on the plane with my parents and my wife and my kids and my family, that was the greatest moment that ever happened to me. I wanted to celebrate that. I wanted to marinate in that. I wanted to throw my golf clubs in the Pacific Ocean. The last thing I wanted to do was play golf. After you won the $15 million in the FedEx Cup at East Lake, why didn't you just go home and celebrate?
You know, the show must go on. And obviously, I went to Switzerland, and I had planned that for a long time with my partner, Omega. We had a watch that we co-designed that was coming out that week. And yeah, it was just, I needed to be there.
Now, I saw you in the Swiss Alps. You had a great Friday, a great Sunday round birding. I think 6 birdies down the stretch after hole 12 to 18. You got into the playoff. It didn't work out, but you played great golf there. But I forget about the golf. I did see you giving a chipping lesson to pop star Justin Timberlake, and I wondered if your BFF, Niall Horan, from One Direction, would be a little jealous of that.
Yeah, so Niall was actually there as well. He was just playing in a different group.
He allowed that to happen.
So he did allow that to happen. We have quite an open relationship. Yeah, it was awesome getting to spend some time with JT. He's a good golfer, and he takes it really seriously. And you can tell that he's played a lot of golf with Justin Rose, because his pre-shot routine needs a little bit of a he needs to quicken up just a touch. But
Rosie slowed down Timberlake's golf game.
Maybe just a little bit. It was good though. I had a really good time. The first time I'd met him before, but I hadn't really got that much, hadn't spent much time with him. And it was awesome to play 18 holes. And then we went, and Erica and myself, we went up to the chalet they were staying in, him and Jessica, and had a couple of glasses of wine and got to know them a little bit. So it was a cool week.
See, that's the great thing about being Rory McIlroy. That's good stuff right there. I love that. Of course, I got the youthful side of Justin Timberlake. I knew him when he had curls, was dating Britney Spears, and he was like, you know, 13 years old. So I didn't get to go to the chateau when he was a mature man and a good golfer and a father and drink expensive wine. But I'm glad you did. That's what our podcast has to offer. In all seriousness, let's jump back to East Lake for a minute. You know, you had said something in a press conference about there's been talk about the new format. There is a lot there. And, I mean, 4 majors in 15 weeks, That includes the players. I mean, that is a big stretch. I think by and large, golf fans, for the most part, keeping Twitter out of it, we're pretty happy with the new format. Shortening to three made some sense. Weird to me, though, it felt like watching the Tour de France. But all in all, looking back now, how did the format feel? I know you won, so you're a little bit biased. Maybe you liked it.
Yeah, I mean, I think I had my reservations at the start of the week. I said that in my press conference. I was like, look, ask me on Monday, and I'll let you know how I feel about it. Obviously, I won, and I played well, and that's great. I think for the prize at the end of it, obviously the $15 million and all of that, I still don't know whether this staggered format is the right way to determine who the best player of the year has been. But I think it is more simple. It is better than previous iterations of it. So, you know, it's a work in progress. I think it always will be. I don't think you're going to be able to keep everyone happy, but, you know, it worked out well. My mindset going into the week was I'm just going to try to shoot the lowest score. I'm going to try to win the gross tournament. I saw a lot of stuff on social media. There was like a gross tournament and a net tournament and all this sort of stuff. But if I tried to win the gross tournament, if someone, you know, that's all I can do. If I play the best of the week.
But you did, right? You won both ways.
Yeah. I won by three the normal way. And then I won by four with it. So it worked out for me. I think it was a little weird on Thursday. You know, everyone starting at different scores. And I think it's the weirdest for the guy that's in the lead. I mean, I think Justin Thomas being 10 under par starting the first day on Thursday, it must have been weird for him. So
it is weird.
It's almost mentally a little bit of a disadvantage.
I agree.
Being that lead guy going out on Thursday, because I was the hunter. I was the one going after him the whole week.
Right. It changes the mindset of what you guys normally do. Like the Tour de 100%. France, like you start the Tour de France going up, you know, you're a minute ahead of your rival, but maybe you're tired and now if you're in the Mile du Jour, like you have a target on your back, and that's just a different mindset for golf.
It is. And I think you have to be so disciplined in a format like that, because all you can do is control yourself. All you can do is do what you do, and look, if it works out at the end of the week, that's great. If not, you know, that's what sport is. It's winning and losing, and losing is a part of it, and you lose a lot more in golf than you win. And you know, luckily for me, it worked out in my favor over those 4 days.
You had also said in that press conference that you do this for the love of the game. I mean, my God, you don't do this for the $15 million. Those of us who know you certainly know that to be true, and your fans do as well. And so, you know, I take that at gospel. Of course, you won, which is great. And I thought, you know, one thing I wanted to offer for you is for what I'm willing to do is take that $15 million out of your life so that you can continue to play just for the love of the game. And you're welcome, but I'm willing to do that for you, because I'm fully convinced when that kind of deposit goes in your bank account, you're not playing for the love of the game anymore. You're simply motivated by cash.
I am in such a fortunate position that I make an unbelievable living from playing a sport that I love and I've loved my whole life. But at the start of my career, when you're trying to get your tour card and, you know, it is at the forefront of your mind. You look at every check you make, at the start of my career, when I played on the European Tour, that was how you measured success. You looked down the order of merit and you're like, okay, how much money did I make? But I think there comes a point where, I don't want this to sound in any way boastful or big headed, but you know, the amount of money that we earn nowadays playing golf, especially at the top level, it's so nice that my kids are going to be able to live a good life and go to college and
have
kids. Whatever they need, and their kids and generations after that. But, you know, the money that we make nowadays, I won't be able to spend that in five lifetimes. And I wouldn't want to spend it in five lifetimes, because that's not, I don't live my life that way. So,
I'm going to take the $15 million from you so you can keep your feet and your spikes on the ground.
So you have 10 jobs. You want to add an 11th as a money manager,
listen,
is what you're saying.
I'm willing to do this for Rory because I feel like...
What's the management fee?
By the way, somebody's, I don't know where I heard this, but it's really funny, and I think this would be great. Somebody had said, and I just agree with this, that if you, when you win the $15 million, you should be forced to spend a third of that, so $5 million in 1 week, and publish the receipts. That would be awesome. So we can all see what you're made of.
Erica's birthday is coming up next week. Not saying that I'm going to spend a third of it, but and we were obviously in Switzerland and had a good time. So I wouldn't say that a third of it's gone, but I'm doing my best to make a little dent in it for sure.
Let's just look back quickly at the year and talk to me just about, because we're talking about the format for this. Are they going to tweak the format? The playoffs have been on for 12 years, right? And it's been different. I feel like they change it every other year. People were, by and large, probably pretty happy with this.
I think so. I mean, as I said, I think it's always going to be a work in progress. Golf is always, it's always going to go back to history. And I think the FedEx Cup will be a bigger deal in 40 or 50 years' time if it's still the FedEx Cup. It could be the whatever Fortune 500 company cup, whatever it is. Yep. But I think that season-long race will start to become more prevalent as it becomes more, more winners and people remember certain things that happen at East Lake at the end of the year, especially before football season, all that sort of stuff. I think, I think the season by and large went very well with, a big tournament every month from March. And my only thing is, it shortens the golf season. So does that make it less relevant the rest of the year?
Yeah, it does. It's a problem. Four majors in 15 weeks is an issue. I think for me as an avid golf fan, it's too bottled up there. And I think your analogy was like tennis. They should spread this out so that you're not out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah, and I've been thinking about that. But at the same time, you look at the NFL. But obviously much bigger market, much bigger viewership, all that sort of stuff. But, the NFL only, they only play for, a third of the year. Mm-hmm. And then the other two thirds. But there's the draft and there's so many other things that they fill that two thirds of the year with. But, I always think exclusivity is a good thing as well. But, maybe if you don't see myself or Tiger or Phil or Jordan or whoever, Brooks or whoever it is, for a few months of the year, does that create a bit more excitement for the fans to see us again?
But who's ever going to care about, one of the tournaments that, the Genesis Open? Like, who's going to care about the West Coast Swing?
Well, I hope people do, because they're wonderful tournaments. The LA Open is such a historical event. I mean, it's played at Riviera, where you're from. And the history of that tournament and the guys that have won there, the fact that Tiger now hosts it, I mean, that should be a big deal.
Yeah, but after Mexico, it all starts with, the API, which you and I were at, and then it's the Players, Masters. I mean, once March and April come on to August, if you're a golf fan, like that's your season, right? I mean, yeah, we're all so busy now. Look at like the way we watch shows. I watch shows, I binge watch them. I schedule them when I have time, like when it's good for me. And now, and in my mind, I'm like, okay, this is the way that golf's worked out. I'm just going to be a big golf fan from March to August, and I'm not going to care what happens in the fall.
Yeah, and look, I think that's just the way of it. You have to make the most of the time that you have in the sun, and that's what golf is trying to do, I guess. My thing is, I just don't want it to be 4 weeks a year matter and all the other stuff is irrelevant, because it's not. It's not to us as golfers. It might be to fans. It might be to other people. But for the guys that are actually playing, I try to bring my best every week. I play 25 weeks a year and I try to bring my best every single week.
Well, that's why the tour is thrilled with how this. I'm sure they'll keep the format the same, because at the end of the day, they could waive those they were touting. Did you feel that, Rory? I mean, they were doing the whole tail of the tape, Rory versus Brooks. Of course, a lot of this goes back to not just your stats, and your stats are remarkably close. 30 and 29, 24, 26 wins, 19 wins. You both have four majors. They listed you at 5'10", which I thought was funny.
Yeah, that's generous.
But did you feel like they were pitting you against Brooksy, trying to make that rivalry?
I think so.
Do you have a problem with that?
No, not at all. I look, if you know, Brooks has been undoubtedly the best player in the world for the last couple of years. And you know, I've been lucky that my career and my consistency level has been good for the last 10. So it was, you know, I feel like they've tried to create a rivalry between myself and Tiger, myself and Jordan, myself and Dustin, myself and Brooks, myself and Jason Day. You know, it's like, it's nice that there's a common denominator there, and it's usually me, which means that I'm doing something right. So, yeah. I like it. You know, I tried to create a little bit of a rivalry mentality going into East Lake because he did. I mean, like he dusted me in Memphis. I mean, he absolutely wiped the floor with me, and I was not happy. I played terribly. I didn't bring any sort of fight to him at all. And, you know, I needed that mentality going into East Lake because, you know, there was a little bit of revenge in there. And I, you know, there was a couple of things that were said, and you know, he talked about trying to be the dominant player in the game. And that was said to me in the media. And I said, well, he's going to have to go through me first. And, yeah. And that is, you know, if that's
both I love
of our
that. That's
if that's both if that's both of our mentalities going
awesome.
Forward, I think that's good for the game.
Roars, that's good sports. That's what you should say. If you didn't say that, I mean, that you got a problem. And as a fan, that's what we want to see. I mean, look at Ezekiel Elliott when he got out of Cabo and he finally, you know, made his deal. He got up there and said, hey, I held out because I believe I'm the best. And every Cowboy yeah. fan, when he gets the ball, you want him to believe. When I watch you and Brooks play, I want to think these are the two titans of their sport, and they are going to go at it. And you did in Memphis, yeah. and you got dusted. And you got that revenge in Eastlake at the highest of levels. And by the way, it was the first time, not only did we think, wow, good for you, Roars, but it was the first time I ever saw Brooks, at least recently, you know, he just didn't play well. It's like
yeah,
he's
I
human.
Mean,
like, the guy's human.
Yeah. And I think it was a long stretch for all of us. He definitely made some mistakes that he wouldn't usually make. And, I mean, I would just put that down to a little bit of mental fatigue, just having, you know, the season that he's had. And it's, you know... It's okay playing 25 events a year, but if you play 25 events a year and 20 of those events you're in contention, that takes so much more out of you than if you just, you know, finish middle of the pack.
No, you're
week.
Being nice. You got him. You got
well,
him.
Yeah, I did get him, but I mean, you know, partly, you know, it was my good play, but also, you know, he made some mistakes that are uncharacteristic, I guess.
When you were walking that, do you guys have much chirping at each other, or what's your relationship on a Sunday like that?
So
is there any chit chat? Is it just
there was chit chat in Memphis, and we were cordial, and he, you know, again, he was playing great. I couldn't get anything going, and I purposely didn't. I tried not to talk to him much in Atlanta. I tried to just do my own thing, stay in my own world, and we would obviously say good shot, good, you know, be
right, gentlemen,
you know, do all that stuff that you're supposed to do in golf, but. I don't think we had one conversation.
No kidding. Wow.
No. But it was big stakes and
yeah,
you know, he felt like he was the best player of the year, and he wanted to finish it off by winning the season long championship. And, you know, I wanted to try to finish my season on a positive note. And, look, that's sport. That's what it should be. As you said,
I know you didn't talk to Brooks like really much outside of good shot on Sunday at East Lake, but I figured you might've had something to say about. And I'll just ask you the question. Were you a little jealous that you weren't in the body magazine that he was in, the ESPN thing? Were you upset about
that?
I was
asked I was asked to do the body issue in 2015.
Yeah.
And I don't have the balls that Brooks has to do that.
Okay.
I can hardly stand in front of myself naked. I don't know if I'd stand in front of 50 people.
All right, good. Okay, all right.
One thing I did want to mention is that a lot of the noise, you know, there was a lot of armchair commissioners on Twitter and on social media and in the media in general, not just social media, not just idiots like us sitting at home on our couch. But one of the things, you know, the match play thing I feel like got a little bit overblown, but one of the things that I thought was interesting was possibly changing the venue of the Tour Championship each year and maybe I know it means so much to Atlanta,
yeah,
but... If there was a West Coast one and there's only 30 players in the field, you know, you started at 7 o'clock on a Sunday night.
So my only thing is, why do you think the Masters has become the most coveted tournament in golf.
Absolutely.
It goes back to the same venue every year.
You know the holes, you know the sounds, you know everything.
And people, that stays with people. And yes, East Lake isn't the most aesthetically pleasing course on TV because it's Bermuda and it's August and there's not much definition. But I think there's something to be said for, I would love the Open Championship to be played at St. Andrews every year. I would love the US Open to be played at Pebble Beach every year. I would love to go back to the same venues because that's what creates legacies and history. And you know, I think that's what Augusta have done so well. So I wouldn't be a fan of that, but I would like to. So for me, I would like to see one of the West Coast events elevated in some way. WGC or, you know, something that stays like at a high position. And I'd also like to see something in the Southern Hemisphere get elevated, a South African Open or an Australian Open or something that like means something to the world of golf.
Like a third crown jewel of the PGA Tour, you're saying. So yeah, the Players, the Tour Championship, and X event.
Something that makes it a little more international, something that we can go down in December and play, and it means something. I'd like to see that.
Listeners, Ryan Griffiths here, producer of the Rory and Carson podcast. Just wanted to give you a little heads up. We recorded this episode just before the big Player of the Year announcement. So if you've gotten this far and you're wondering, why the hell aren't they talking about Player of the Year? Well, that's why. Rest assured, though, we'll have much, much more on that in future episodes. We do, however, appreciate the listen and are always looking for a little feedback. So if you've got a question, a comment, or a concern, pop us a line at Rory and Carson at golfchannel.com. All right, let's get back to the show.
One thing I wanted to mention, you know, we're recording this podcast at a time when Hurricane Dorian has just ripped through several places. And one of the places that it's ripped through is the Bahamas. Now, it's not far from you, where you live in Jupiter, where you are. I've got a special love of the Bahamas and the Abaco Islands. I lived there when I was working in 1999 for MTV. I actually moved there for a while, and I've been going back there regularly, and I love the people there, and they really got hit hard. I saw footage just recently of Marsh Harbor, which I was just there recently, and I know you and a lot of your friends who enjoy Baker's Bay, which is a very exclusive golf facility there in the Abaco Islands as well. You go through Marsh Harbor. It's decimated. I mean, this is a horrible thing, and we wanted to just take a second to let people know that even now, this is going to take years to rebuild. The stories that are coming out of there are terrible, and our thoughts and prayers are with everybody there who's experienced a loss. There's all sorts of crazy stories we're getting. And so anyway, if you'd like to donate, you can go to redcross.org. That is the organization that NBC News has been pushing on all their platforms. I pushed it out on Instagram and got all this feedback from people saying, no, that's not the right charity. Find your own charity. Do whatever you can do, but do something because they need it.
Yeah, there's Red Cross, as you said. There's a Discovery Land Company. I've got a foundation who obviously own Baker's Bay and are a massive presence in the Abaco Islands. They have a relief fund going as well. But as you said, whoever, there's so many different ones that you can donate to. I saw something about you know, people in Florida can just bring stuff to the port in Fort Lauderdale, and they're shipping things over all the time. We have friends that have places in Bakers, and you know, that, and these are you know, well built homes, and roofs are off, and water damage, and windows are out, and yeah, the images are just horrendous.
We'll move on. I wanted to just. We should mention it, put out well wishes to those that are suffering. And also in the Carolinas, they're suffering greatly. So don't write. There's lots of people were impacted. So we're including all of those people. But certainly the Bahamas got hit really, really hard. And so if you can do something, find it in your heart to do it because they really, really need it. One thing I wanted to hit with you is Arnold Palmer would have been 90 years old this month. And give me an Arnold story. You and I have talked about him a little bit. I've got one great one. I've interviewed him, but I have one moment with my dad at Augusta, which I think I may have told you or not. But give me something.
Yeah. So my wife Erica and Arnold share the same birthday,
right?
September 10th. So yeah. So I know exactly when he would have been turning 90. So for whatever reason, I think because of that shared birthday, you know, he was always Erica's favorite sort of old school player, you know, over Jack Nicklaus or any of the others. Arnold was her favorite. So she got a chance to meet him in 2016 at Bay Hill during the tournament. And I brought her over and I said, Mr. Palmer, this is, at that point, this is my fiance, Erica. And he, I said to him, you guys share the same birthday. And I don't think he heard me correctly. And he said, oh, happy birthday. And I said, no, Mr. Palmer, you share the same birthday, September 10th. Oh, and he puts his hand on her shoulder. We should have a party. So, I mean, he makes every, and then I had dinner with him once as well at Bay Hill, and he ordered fish. And as the fish came over and the waitress put it down, he said, could I have some A1 steak sauce? And the waitress was sort of confused, and she said, for your fish, Mr. Palmer? And he said, no, for me. Like, just, it's just, he makes people feel so comfortable, or made people feel so comfortable. So, you know, Erica was nervous meeting him. I'm sure the waitress was nervous serving him. And he makes people, or made people feel so just on the same level and so comfortable and so personable. And, you know, I had so many great times with him, and, you know, he's sorely missed in the world of golf, but, you know, it's not sad. He should be celebrated. He should be, you know, he was such a great character, and the things that he did for our game, it's amazing.
You know, golf was such a considered a populist sport for so long, and, you know, Arnold Palmer was the king, of course, and he the biggest trailblazer in the game of golf. He did all of it at the age of television, right, in the 1950s, and he bridged that gap of golf being such an elitist sport, and bridged the gap right to the working class, and you know,
because he was working class.
Yeah,
you know, he grew up in Latrobe, and I guess his father was a golf pro, and you know, he grew up so normal, but just loved the game of golf. And as you said, that he made the sport more accessible in this country, which is, you know, I'd love, you know, it still has a ways to go to become even more accessible here and throughout the world, but, you know, he made a huge impact for sure.
Yeah, it got me thinking about the king. If Jack and Tiger are 1-2, who's 3, 4, and 5? Who's 3 and 4?
Who's 3? Walter Hagen.
What Hagen do?
11 majors.
Okay.
I think one of the most underrated ones is Gary Player. Really underrated.
Nine majors,
career Grand Slam, hundreds of wins around the world.
Right.
163 pro wins. That number is just kind of baffling.
Yeah, I mean, they're all over the world. They're probably weaker fields. They're, you know, but you still have to go and win. You still got to put the ball in the hole. You can only win what's in front of you, right? So I think it's one of the most underrated careers in golf history. And I think as well, because golf has sort of become very American centric, and he's an international player. The fact that, you know, he won two more majors than, like, Arnie made way more impact on the game outside of golf. You know, he won 7 majors, which is an unbelievable career in its own right. But I just think the impact he made outside of that,
it's probably him and Tiger 1 and 2 for impact, if we're saying impact. 100%.
Well, I think you have to put it all together. Yeah. So Jack 1, Tiger 2, Arnie 3, let's say. Who's in 4? I mean, is it?
Well, no, I would say I would say Tiger 1.
Tiger 1.
Yeah, like it, like, yes, you can go on majors 1, but again, as Ryan said, talking about the impact that has been
I hear
made,
you. I agree.
Yeah, that's, I mean,
I mean, it's 1-2. I mean, if anybody wanted to put Jack first, they certainly could based on just majors. But if you're going to add the totality, I mean, no one has changed a sport more than Tiger. I mean, that is a fact. So yeah, so Jack
and Tiger has won more PGA Tour events than Jack. And you know, there's a lot of different things that you can. But number one in my mind is Tiger, and maybe that's because I grew up in that generation. But I would say Tiger, Jack. In terms of success, I mean, you've got Byron Nelson, Snead, Hagen, Hogan. I mean, there's so many. Bobby Jones, Tom Watson.
It just gets a little muddy after 1 and 2. Like, everybody knows 1 and 2. Yeah, That's why it's an interesting question.
But how do you not have Arnie at 3? I mean, talk about everything we just said about the guy.
Yeah, I know. But you know, there's
62 wins, seven majors, next to Tiger. You know, is the face of golf. You know, changes the sport in a lot of ways. Maybe not in the same ways, but in a lot of equally as important ways.
Definitely, and I think you could say the same about Seve. Seve did the same for golf in Europe. He had five major wins, 50 European Tour wins. Didn't win as much over in the States because he didn't play as much over here. But you know, you could argue that he had the same impact on the other side of the world for golf as Arnold had here. I mean, look, you could talk about it all day. And I would love to talk about it all day because I love the history of the game, and I really respect the people that came before me and paved the way for me and my contemporaries to do what we do. So,
Give me your 2 cents on Hogan, because he had 64 wins, 9 majors, but I mean, he stopped in like the prime of his career with the accident. Like, what more could Hogan have done had the accident never happened? A lot or not so much more?
I don't know, because Hogan never, you know, the closer Hogan got to the green, the more he didn't like it. And I think if he had went on and the, you know, how golf courses are maintained and how they started to become faster and more, I think that mightn't have played into his hands. You know, he was ball striking, but I think nowadays are even getting into the 70s that, you know, you needed to be able to putt better. You needed to have good speed and chip. And so, I mean, you know, who knows? You know, again, these are all hypotheticals, you know, it's great just to be able to talk about and debate. Yeah. But I mean, Hogan is, you know, in terms of everyone still looks at Hogan's swing and says it's the best, you know, one of the best swings ever.
He might
ever
have done the most for the swing.
Yeah.
To be honest with
you.
For everybody has taken a little bit for
golf
him.
Technique. And there's still certain positions in his swing that apply today with modern equipment. And you know, so
it always, it seems like it's cyclical. It comes back. I remember when Hogan's swing was the model. And then I felt like things got detached a little bit, you know, cause he was so, everything was so inside and so tight, his elbows, especially. Then things started to kind of like, there was flying elbows and creating swing arc and getting the club further away. And then it kind of came back around. It always seems to go back to the basics of Hogan.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's key fundamentals in the golf swing that'll never change, no matter what equipment we play with. I mean, I think when Tiger, you know, like people gravitate towards who is playing the best at that time.
Yeah.
So when Tiger came out, massive arc, you know, right flying right elbow a little bit across the line, you know, people said, okay, that's the swing that works nowadays. And then, you know, there's so many different ways to do it as well. I mean, I think one of the worst things in golf is people are overcoached and they don't figure it out on their own, because there's so many different ways to make it work. Look at Jack Nicklaus and Raymond Floyd and Lanny Watkins, and there's so many different ways to do it.
Well, there's also Jim Furyk and even Matthew Wolff now, if you look at what's happening.
But what Matt Wolff is doing is not, it's not new. You look at
he
guys,
looks like Jack, actually.
You look at Gabe Brewer, you look at Jimmy Bruin, Irish guy, cross the line, you know, that's not new. That's been done before.
Right.
So people just don't have the historical knowledge to know that.
But Rory, you know, it's frustrating. Like in the 80s, for us amateur golfers, I hit 1 million golf balls in the 80s as a junior with a white towel across my chest, underneath my arms, right? And taking full 7-iron swings so that towel would never drop, all right? I would hold that close. That was a train. I did that for hours and days and years and months. And then Tiger comes around with a flying right elbow. And now the pro's saying, oh, no, you're in too, we got to get things moving out. I was like, I just spent a decade doing it one way, and now I got to do it another way.
Well, no, you don't have to. It's you have the choice. And I think what you were doing with the towel drill is a very good drill. I use it sometimes myself to keep that connection between your arms and your body.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing. But then that works for irons and wedges. But whenever you get to, you know, longer irons, driver, you have to create some separation. You have to create some speed. So, but it's all figuring out a way that works for you. I mean, I swing my way. If I give my swing to someone else, it mightn't work for them.
Roars, we don't have a lot of time. I know you're home. You got back from Switzerland. You're here for 2 weeks. We mentioned you played 7 out of 8 weeks. I imagine you're exhausted. Your golf clubs are in the closet. What does the next month look like for you? I know you're going to go back over for the – is it the BMW next?
Yeah, so I'll go back over to Europe. I'll play the BMW PGA at Wentworth, and then I'm playing in the Dunhill Links Pro-Am the week after with my dad, which is going to be a lot of fun. It's his 60th birthday is coming up, and it's his birthday present from me, so we're going to get to play. So those are the next two coming up, and I'll come back to Florida for a few weeks, and then I'll go to Asia. I'll play in Japan. I'm playing an exhibition with Tiger and Hideki and Jason Day, and also the new PGA Tour event there. And then I'll play in China, so a little two-week stretch in Asia. Then I'll come back to Florida for 10 days and then go to Dubai, and that's the last tournament of the year for me.
Wow, what a schedule.
Tour.
That is impressive.
Yeah, so still got a little bit of travel coming up.
Let's just start with the PGA at Wentworth. Who are you playing with in the Pro-Am?
I think I'm playing with a couple of Man United players, Paul Scholes, and I think Nemanja Vidic, maybe.
Are those friends of yours, or I don't know anything about soccer?
Yeah, so I've played with Paul Scholes before. I've played with they always try to pair me with the Man United guys at Wentworth, which is cool. It's a big thrill for me because these are the guys I watched growing up and winning Premier League titles and Champions Leagues, and so it's a pretty cool thing for me. I think that's what I'm playing with at Wentworth.
And the Dunhill is like Pebble Beach. You know, I won Pebble Beach a couple years ago.
Did you? I didn't know that.
And do I need to go play in the Dunhill now to get it done on that side of the world as well?
So you should be going for like the Triple Crown of Pro-Ams. That's what you should be
doing. I would love to. So you're playing with your dad in that one? So you're not available.
I am taken for this year.
Can you hook me up with a pro if I play in the Dunhill, not this year, but next year?
Certainly. I will definitely.
Who
do
you
that.
Think I would pair well with and like that you could arrange for us to play?
Why don't you sit down and think about it? Give me a list.
Oh God, I will.
And then I'll go from there.
Brooks Koepka, your buddy, will you call him for me?
Sure. I don't have his number, but I'll try to get it.
Oh, that's funny. All right, so you have quite a bit of traveling going on. What do you do? What will you, Erica, do here? You got 2 weeks. You know, I see You're home, and what are you going to do? Do you have like stuff, like house stuff to do?
So, we moved into our home on the Sunday of the British Open. Not ideal. I didn't want to be moving into my house the Sunday of the British Open, but
how's the crib? What does it look like?
It's good. It's still a work in progress, but we're in. But it's getting there. So a lot of that sort of stuff still going on. I got to figure out. I was going to take Erica away for her birthday next week, but that's probably not going to happen, so try to figure out where to go and go to for a nice dinner. And then I've put the clubs away all this week. I'll probably get them back out again maybe Thursday next week and start to hit some shots again. And I've been watching a lot of the tennis in New York.
Yeah,
it's been fun, been following that. Hopefully Rafa finishes it off and Serena as well. So yeah, I mean, a lot of chilling and just not getting away from golf.
Well, good. Well deserved. For golf fans out there, a quick reminder that you can see exclusive coverage of my co-host here on the podcast, Rory McIlroy, and his group all day, every day at the BMW PGA Championship. That's only for you Golf Pass members. So if you're not a Golf Pass member, do that, and then you can enjoy all that exclusive coverage. So you have that to look forward to. It'll be streaming on Golf Pass. Come back and check it out.
Listeners, Ryan Griffiths here, producer of the Rory and Carson podcast. And if you're like me and live and breathe the game of golf, you want all the golf content you can possibly consume. For nerds like us, there's only one place to go, Golf Pass. This show you're listening to, full video version right now on Golf Pass. If you're an instruction geek or crave in-depth analysis, Golf Pass. Faraday episodes, Brandel breaking down swings, and your favorite Golf Channel films, they're all on Golf Pass. Plus, you get deals. Who doesn't like deals? Exclusive member benefits on rounds, travel, gear, and more. Here's the best part. It's $9.99 a month. That's less than you're going to spend on lunch today. So let's go. Get over to golfpass.com and check it out today.
All right. Now let's get to news to us.
All right. Lots of news going on around the world.
Yep.
Figure we'll check in on some of it. We'll start in the world of golf. And Rory.
Boring.
This is actually kind of funny. I saw this last night. Golf has seen all sorts of weird rulings throughout the years, and Paul Casey was nearly involved in one at the European Open. You know about this, I assume.
I do know about this.
So Casey was called in to take a second look at one of the putts he made during his second round 73 at the European Open. And after it was determined, his ball rolled directly over a bug before diving into the left edge of the hole.
Okay.
As Casey explains in the video tweeted out by the European Tour, if you knowingly hit an animal, which a bug is considered an animal, while taking a stroke, you have to replay the shot. Rory, do you know about this rule?
I did not know about this rule, but I saw the piece on the European Tour yesterday. And I saw the bug was sort of on the right edge of the whole line, and then as Paul's ball is rolling. But I mean,
knowingly mean?
But that's the unfair thing. So his grip is being televised.
Correct.
Right? If his grip isn't televised, it's not a thing.
Yeah.
You know, so that's there's
could you imagine calling your boys out on that? Like,
I hit a bug, bro. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but what does knowingly mean? Do you think Paul took it back and said, I'm going to carom this ball right off that ladybug?
Like, no one's good enough.
Knowingly.
There's no one good enough in the world of golf to knowingly hit a bug on the green or a bird in a tree or whatever.
It's a stupid rule.
Like, there's a lot of those in golf.
And I hate that whole thing, by the way, not to jump on the high horse, but all that TV stuff where these people call in and, like, I mean, it's give me a break. Don't you have anything better to do?
Yeah, exactly. I agree.
All right, moving on. Here we go. Millennials are slamming 18% more drinks a month because of their annoying children, according to a report. A Booze Behemoth says millennials are drinking alcohol at an increasing rate thanks to a stressful new addition to their generation, their children. Constellation Brands Incorporated reports that the average millennial consumed about 24 drinks a month in 2013, back when they were young and wild and free.
A month.
But this year they're up to 29 drinks a month on average.
Wow. Rebels.
Carson, news to you.
No, it's not news to me, because this is made possible by the fact that millennials probably still live at home, and it's their parents that are actually purchasing the liquor and have an abundance of liquor in the house for them to abuse.
With their grandchildren or living with them?
Everybody lives together now, because millennials are incapable of believing that they can build an economic structure in their own life or earn enough money to actually get their own house. Because it's much more important for them to overspend surcharges on DoorDash and all these apps. They don't mind that, but, like, never mind savings. It's news to me, but I'm not surprised by it. Carson, I'm
liking you more and more.
Yeah, man.
Every podcast I find out a little more about you, and I like it.
Oh, and you actually like it. Okay, that could have gone either way.
I like it. This was
intentional to get you fired up. And if that got you fired up, this next one's going to get you even more fired up.
Yeah.
And we'll end on this.
Okay.
So we're taping this on Saturday, September 7th, and this is very likely to change by the time we put it live on the 16th. But Antonio Brown, in the course of 48 hours, has managed to alienate, then make up with, then re-alienate, and it looks as of right now he's being released. Carson, what's your take on this as a diehard Raiders fan?
I'm going to bite my tongue, because I've experienced a little bit of what I think is happening here in sports and entertainment, the only two professional fields where this sort of behavior is allowed. Like, nowhere else in business or in the work world do employees get away with this kind of behavior. I've seen it in entertainment. I've seen it at The Voice, the show. I've seen R.A.B. act a certain way, and I've seen the boss let it slide for the sake of the win, right? It's a behavior that it's just exclusive to sports and entertainment for some reason. Now, as a Raiders fan, they knew what they were getting, but I let the feet thing slide, the cryo thing. Someone forgot to cover his feet. He got the blisters, no big deal. The helmet thing was the first.
The helmet thing as well?
No, the helmet thing, him and like 60 other players, including Tom Brady, were all notified last year that the models of their helmets needed to be, they had a year to find a new helmet. He didn't. What blew it for me was him taking clubhouse business, and the letter that he got from GM Mike Mayock, publishing that in social media was it for me. That's clubhouse business. That stays in the locker room. You don't tweet that stuff out. What's happened after that is just, I'm at the point now where they need to let him go, get their $30 million back, and most importantly, this is a mental health issue. AB has this. This is Kanye West. Before that, it was Amanda Bynes. Before that, it was Britney Spears shaving her head. We've seen this erratic behavior before. It's not fun. It's not funny. We're making it that way right now. But there's something deep-rooted here. They need to keep an eye on this guy, and he needs to get help.
I thought you said you were going to bite your tongue on that.
That was me biting my tongue. But the Raiders got to get rid of him. It's making the organization look like they look stupid. This is a guy that threatened to punch Mike Mayock, his GM, allegedly calling him a cracker, which is a racial slur. I mean, refusing to pay fines and posting stuff. I mean, this is all – let it be somebody else's problem. It's not worth the, you know, whatever he's going to bring to the field. Would you start him if you're the GM, given what's happened today? Would you start him Monday night against the Broncos?
I think he's going to be cut. I think by the time this hits live air, he's going to be a goner. And I don't think any other team's touching him.
Well, they'll never give him $30 million guaranteed. They'll take him on a protected basis. You know who's going to probably take him? Belichick. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's wrap it out.
All right. Rory, as always, it's good to see you, buddy. Get some rest. We'll look forward to next podcast diving in on some time you're going to spend in Asia and the Middle East as your whirlwind year and tours just continue. So go get some rest, my friend.
Thanks, Carson. Good to see you as always. Yo.
Loyal listeners of the Rory and Carson podcast, if you like the show, why don't you go over to golfpass.com and check out our video version with a 7-day free trial. After you're done with us, take a look around. You'll find awesome originals like Swing Expedition, our Breaking Instruction Series, and Toughest Tracks. Those shows, plus exclusive deals on travel, rounds, and gear. It's all on Golf Pass. Go over and check it out today.